Anger in the US after the Supreme Court strikes down a 50-year-old abortion law. Protesters say it's an attack on personal freedom. Supporters say it will save lives. But how will this ruling impact other laws? And can Roe versus Wade be restored? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahalbarra. A woman's right to terminate a pregnancy has been one of the most divisive issues around the world in recent days. France is voting to make it a constitutional right. Abortion is legal there up to 14 weeks into the pregnancy. In Germany, it's illegal unless it poses a health risk to the mother. German officials, however, say they plan to change that. But it was the United States that made global headlines with a historic ruling.
This is what democracy looks like!
The Supreme Court on Friday decided to strike down Roe versus Wade, a federal ruling that allowed abortion in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. It had been law of the land for nearly 50 years. Immediately after the decision came down, dozens of states began to ban or severely restrict the procedure. It also led to protests right across the country. On one side, women say they've lost control over their own bodies, while others say the decision was long overdue.
It's completely inappropriate and it has to change because we're just going to go backwards by 100 years. These states don't care about the rights of the women, so we've all just become second-class citizens.
The systems are fundamentally unjust. The Supreme Court is not democratic at all.
The whole Roe v. Wade situation was a lie. It was built on a lie. And people need to know that this abortion is not good for people. It should never be. It should never be okay to kill another person.
I think it's really important, anything we can do to support life and to dispel the lie that life is just merely a choice, that we can do away with the unborn with no regard for the sanctity of life.
We'll bring in our guests in a moment. First, let's have a closer look at Roe versus Wade. It was a 1973 Supreme Court ruling that said a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy was protected by the US Constitution. It was a 7-2 decision that said the 14th Amendment covers the right to privacy, which in turn protects abortion. It said the government could not regulate abortions at all during the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. While in the second part of the pregnancy, the government can regulate it to protect a woman's life. But it said abortion could be regulated and even stopped by the government during the last stages of pregnancy. Let's bring in our guests. They're all joining us from the United States. In Burlington, Ruth Hardy, state senator for Vermont. In Atlanta, Jill Cartwright, writer, organizer, and former campaign lead with Southerners on Your Ground. And in Austin, Amy O'Donnell, director of communications at the Texas Alliance for Life. Welcome to the program. Ladies, I would like to start by breaking down the significance of this Supreme Court decision and its impact on the U.S. Let me start with you, Ruth. You are from Vermont, a state which still protects abortion. But now, do you see yourself on a collision course with the federal system itself?
Thank you. In Vermont, we are very fortunate that our right to abortion has been protected due to the hard work of the legislature here. In 2019, we passed a law codifying the practice and protection of reproductive health care, including abortion, so that women across Vermont will continue to have access to abortion. And this year, in 2022, we have on our ballot a constitutional amendment that will guarantee reproductive autonomy for all Vermonters. So we are fortunate in Vermont that we acted quickly and proactively to protect the rights of all people in Vermont to so they have access to reproductive health care. Unfortunately, that's not true for millions and millions of Americans, and this has been a devastating court decision for millions of people across our country.
Jill, what's next for women of low income and women of color who are likely to bear the brunt of this decision?
So right now, it's unfathomable, I must say, that we are in a period where we are returning to, ushering back an era of forced pregnancy. As you know, this is something that was widespread and prevalent most during the period of slavery. And even as we saw in 2019 with the forced sterilizations in a Georgia immigration center, detention center, this is something that has been happening in prisons and jails, but now this is leaking out into the public arena. And so Black and Brown working and poor women are the ones who have to contend with that, right? We're the ones who bear the brunt of these kind of egregious unfair policies. And so right now, it's a matter of looking back, a matter of looking around at each other and being able to show up for each other in a way that allows for us to care for ourselves, to be able to care for our children, right, outside of the state. 60% of women who go to have abortions across the board are people who already have children in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. Abortion is a necessary right because it allows us to be able to care for the children that we already have or the children that we may want to have in the future. And so right now for Black and Brown working people who are able to have children or may have benefited from abortion, now it's a matter of understanding, okay, what are these laws actually saying? At what point can I abort, right? At what point can I abort my pregnancy? At what point do I need to see a medical doctor and so on? So it's a really rough time.
Amy, the people in the US, women in particular, are grappling with this massive shift in the legal landscape, particularly when it comes to the issue of abortion. The Supreme Court is saying that we are handing over the control about the issue of abortion to the states to decide. People are saying this is something that has been taken away, a fundamental right from us. How do you see it?
It's interesting that you say women across the United States are grappling with this decision. I, along with many women, are celebrating this decision that the Supreme Court has rendered, stating that there is no constitutional right to abortion, that that was erroneously decided previously, and that the power to legislate abortion should again return to the states and to the voters to allow their voices to vote in elected officials who will represent their values and bring forth those values in the laws of their state. In Texas, I and many women are celebrating the fact that life is now protected from conception to birth with our Human Life Protection Act, which passed in the 87th legislative session in 2021. That law goes into effect 30 days after the final judgment is rendered, and I am so thrilled to say that life is now protected in our state.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, can you explain to us what happens next, particularly when in a place like Vermont, you're seeing an influx of women trying to have abortion in your own state? Now, you have to provide them with protection, but at the same time, there is another concern, which is basically push back against prosecution if they decide to take that decision.
If people come to Vermont to have an abortion, it is safe and legal to do so in Vermont. And we will be looking next session at legislation to ensure the protection of people from other states coming here, as well as healthcare providers. And that's something I really want to underscore. Abortion and reproductive healthcare is healthcare. It is vital healthcare. And that is something that is being denied now to millions of women and people across the United States. It is healthcare, fundamental healthcare. And it is something that is completely necessary for people who may or may not want to carry a pregnancy to term, including people who are carrying a pregnancy to term and may have complications. And those people are no longer protected in the states that have trigger bans that have now outlawed abortion. It is fundamentally dangerous in many states to be a woman of reproductive age because these laws are denying women the right to vital health care. Mm-hmm. And I also want to underscore that the ability to vote in elected officials that will protect that health care is being fundamentally dismantled in many of the same states, with denying vital protections for voters and gerrymandering legislative seats, making it very, very difficult to vote in people who will mm-hmm. protect this vital health care.
Jill, quite interesting that in a place like the United States of America, women are in some sort of a limbo. They are yet to understand what happens next when they take the decision to travel to another state for abortion, what happens to them, the risk for repercussions and being prosecuted by their own state. They're looking for many answers before taking the decision.
Yes, and I want to speak to this falsehood that banning abortion is protecting life. Because I think that when you make a statement like that, the question follows of what lives you're talking about, right? So when we ban abortions across the board, such as in the 13 states that have trigger bans and total bans on abortion that go into effect following this ruling, we're talking about hundreds of women pre-Roe v. Wade, hundreds of women and people died yearly from unsafe abortions because they could not get a safe and fair and accessible abortion, but they also could not bear their child. For whatever reason, they could not afford to have a child because they were in a domestic violence situation. Abortions, the absence of abortions heightens domestic violence situations where women, pregnant women who often cannot find work and often are in need of care, are forced to stay in situations where they are housed with someone who is violent, who may not be caring for them, who may not allow them to seek the care that they need. And so domestic violence then leads to death as well. I think there's a number of ways that we can protect life, right? But life is nuanced, and it does not just come down to one single situation where someone might be carrying a baby or a fetus, right? Or someone might have been fertilized or their contraception did not work. And that's what I think is scary about this, is because a lot of these abortion laws do not have that nuance to understand what actually is an abortion. Women mm-hmm. who are having miscarriages, right? Women who have miscarriages and people who are pregnant that have miscarriages often need to have a doctor's assistance to finish the miscarriage so that they do not die or they do mm-hmm. not have health impacts, mm-hmm. right? And so if that is being characterized as an abortion, or if life-saving procedures are being characterized as abortions, that means that we're criminalizing all pregnant people for wanting to essentially save their own life. So mm-hmm. we cannot talk about life and protecting life as a blanket statement when it comes to abortion, when in a lot of these situations, the abortion is what stands between death and someone's life.
Amy, you said you're among many women who are celebrating the decision because this is something that respects life. And then when you're talking to the women who are expressing their concerns as we speak in the United States of America, how do you see moving forward against the backdrop of this divisive political reality in the United States of America? People are divided about every single aspect of their own daily lives, including abortion.
One thing that I think is highly important is that we address the misinformation that is being perpetuated. In 1970, Dr. Bernard Nathanson, somewhere during that time, put forth erroneous information stating that there were numerous women that died from abortions before Roe v. Wade. And so with that information that's now been perpetuated through time, we have seen those lies carried forth, which he in fact even came out after he transitioned from being an abortion doctor to being pro-life. He even came out and said that was not true. It was made up statistics, but we still hear those made up statistics perpetuated. And so I just want to say that we need to be careful there to make sure that we're sharing factual, backupable information. Mm-hmm. And also things such as miscarriage care, ectopic pregnancy care. I've seen a lot of misinformation about there and concern out there that treatment for these very real conditions is not going to be possible now. The reality is that in Texas, every abortion law has medical emergency exceptions, covers ectopic pregnancies, covers anything that could potentially take or heavily impact the life of the mother. And then miscarriage care is not abortion care. When a body naturally miscarries a baby, that care that helps the mother's body expel all of the fragments of that pregnancy is not considered abortion, and the medications that are available to help with that are still available to help with that. And so we see a lot of fear. We see a lot of misinformation. What I want to tell women, especially women
Amy,
in Texas, is that we have a vast amount of resources available to help take care of
you. This is misinformation. You cannot say that this is misinformation when this is information that has been collected for decades.
Absolutely.
Under a safe, under the existence of Roe v. Wade, we have been able to actually ask and talk to people who are having abortions about their experiences, about what's happening, because those people were protected, because they did not fear that if they told the truth about what was happening, that they would go to jail. That is the reality of this.
It's misinformation.
People cannot tell
the truth. This is exactly, ladies, why I was talking about this polarization, which is crippling a debate in the United States of America about how to move forward. I have different angles to cover here. Let me go to Ruth. People talk a lot about Roe versus Wade, but they forget that at the same time, there's a tradition of century-old laws criminalizing abortion at state levels, and they were widely considered as dormant. And people are pretty much concerned that these laws could now, against the backdrop of this recent decision, could be triggered once again. What does it mean for the U.S. for the issue of abortion?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. As an example, in one state, Wisconsin, there was a law in the books from 1849 that was triggered by the Supreme Court case on Friday. And now abortion is mostly illegal in the state of Wisconsin because of this 170-year-old law that was in that state that the legislature failed to get rid of after Roe v. Wade. So it is very, very important that state legislatures be vigilant, especially in states where they are trying to protect the right of people to access reproductive health care and abortion, and making sure that they put in proactive laws like we did here in Vermont to protect that right to vital health care. And I do want to say that there were many women who died from illegal abortions prior to Roe v. Wade, and that is not a lie. That is true, and that will happen again, because when people are desperate, they take desperate measures, and we need to make sure that they have vital access to health care. And also, there is testimony from medical providers themselves, from doctors in Texas and other states, talking about the fear that they have for providing health care in the case of necessary abortions, in the case of miscarriages. So that is true. Health care providers themselves are afraid of providing this health care in these states.
Jill, it's going to be just a matter of days before the trigger laws come into effect. Now, do you think that pro-abortion activists will have to wait for the pendulum to swing left before this reality changes once again?
So what I have known, and what I've always known as an organizer, as someone who has always tried to be on the right side of history, right, is that whether or not the political pendulum, wherever it swings, communities, especially marginalized communities, the people who are most impacted by discriminatory rulings like this one, have always remained grounded in solidarity with each other and being willing to do what it takes to make sure that our people are safe, to make sure that people who want abortions and people who want to be able to make decisions about their own bodies and their own lives are mm-hmm. able to do so. And so there is no waiting. We cannot wait. If we wait for, actually, this week, a couple of weeks ago, we just celebrated, right? Emancipation mm-hmm. and the ending of chattel slavery with the Juneteenth holiday, which is a federal holiday now. We have that holiday because even with the centuries of slavery that was happening in the U.S., some people had to wait to be freed, mm-hmm. right? It was legal. It was fully legal for Black people, enslaved Africans, to be free. And some of them did not know, but others did not wait. Okay. Others found their freedom before it was legally justified. And that's something that we still have to do now, is to still understand that just because the Supreme Court, an illegitimate Supreme Court, mm-hmm. I might say, decides that abortion is not a human right, does not make it so.
Amy,
and so we will continue to protect our...
Yes,
perfect.
Yes.
Amy, I have this question for you, if you don't mind, which is basically the justices based their decision on an interpretation, a conservative interpretation of history and tradition. Now, when Justice Clarence Thomas says in his concurring opinion that other issues are likely to be revisited, particularly people are talking now about contraception and same-sex relationships. Are you of that view? Do you think this should, the decision should extend to those other issues?
It's important to note that Justice Thomas's concurrence has no bearing on the actual decision itself. Justice Alito very clearly said in his decision that this pertains to abortion and abortion alone. It does not impact Obergefell. It does not impact contraceptives. It does not impact same-sex unions. And he ends that passage, I believe it's on page 79 of the brief, with, I don't know how we could be more clear. Now, the concurrence that Thomas wrote, called dicta in lawyer terms, it's basically his thoughts. And he is in the minority on the court with his beliefs about substantive due process and the 14th Amendment, but he is one of all the justices that lands there, and he is allowed to put forth his opinion and his concurrence. And so that is where he stands. That is not where the court as a whole stands, nor is that where the decision itself stands.
Ruth, do you think that it's about time to restructure or to reform the Supreme Court? Because widely seen as biased, polarized by many people who are angry and who are saying the president or the Congress has to look for ways to expand it.
Yeah, I think this decision has clearly shown that this court is a political court. It is not a court that is based on the rule of law or the Constitution as a living document. This court is a political court that is making political decisions, which is not what the United States Supreme Court is supposed to be. There are also some questions about the ethical functioning of this court that I think need to be looked into. And the majority of the appointees to this court were appointed by presidents who did not win the popular vote. So there's clearly a case to be made that this court needs to be reformed. And unfortunately, I don't think we have the Congress that is that it would be willing and mm-hmm. able to do so. But we need to be making sure that we have a Supreme Court that is a legitimate Supreme Court that is looking at our Constitution in the 21st century and for the best health and welfare of the current population of the United States. Most Americans believe, 80% of Americans believe abortion should be legal, and this court has thrown a decision in their face. So we do need to look at reforming the Supreme Court and protecting Americans from a politicized court that is not working in their best interest.
Fortunately, we're running out of time. Ruth Hardy, Jill Cartwright, Amy O'Donnell, I really appreciate your insight. Looking forward to talking to you in the future. Thank you. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Albaro, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.